I guess this is it. Hi, I'm Cheryl, a compulsive overeater and a food addict. And I like to remind myself every day that God loves and accepts me just the way I am. I'd just like to, before I share, honor the people who came before me, who are not in this room. They can't be in this room. They're not here anymore. But they were instrumental in my recovery. Esther, I don't know if anybody remembers Esther, but Esther was my Eskimo. Esther used to talk about Eskimos as being the person who brought you into program. And she was my Eskimo, and she just happened, she just died this past February. Peggy was my sponsor for probably 15 years. Along with Bernadette, Peggy was the most spiritual person I ever knew. She was not of my religion, but she taught me all about God. And she taught me that how to love myself the way God loves me. Sheila and I came into program about the same time. And Sheila taught me to be gentle with myself. I was a struggler right from the beginning, and it looked like Sheila just got it, you know, just like that. She was abstinent, she lost her weight, and I would keep beating myself up, and Sheila taught me how to be gentle with myself. Babs, Barbara, many of you know her. What I remember most about her was her attitude switch. She taught me how to, when I'm in a negative attitude or if I'm into fear, just switch that switch off and see the glass half full and focus more on the faith than fear. Joan was my first sponsor. I really learned how to work program from Joan. She also died within the last couple of years. And then Robbie. What I got from Robbie was that she just kept coming back. She persisted in her recovery. I know she was in several different programs, and she just worked them so hard. And I think we were all the beneficiaries of her recovery, and she will be missed. People were talking this morning about what is the one thing they could have if they could have anything. And when I first came into this program, of course, I wanted the weight loss. I wanted to be thin. I wanted to fit into a certain size clothes. I wanted my husband to treat me a certain way. I wanted my kids to, you know, behave appropriately. I just wanted things to be the way I thought they should be. And for many years of my recovery, that's how I tried to, I want to say for many years of my years in program, that's how I tried to make it work. And of course, that's not what did it for me. What I've really learned that I want, if I have to put it in one word, is peace. I just want peace because I am my own worst enemy. I beat myself up. I'm harder on myself than anybody is to me. And I just want to get that monkey off my back. I just want peace. And what I've learned is that I cannot get peace from a food plan. I cannot get peace from a number on the scale. I thought I could. But it doesn't work that way for me. So let me tell you how I've come about to get peace in my life. And I really feel like I do have it today. It's not like my life has no programs. My husband has a lot of health issues. There are all kinds of relationship problems in my family, and I share openly at meetings. But I have peace. And the reason that I have peace is for something that I read in a meditation book every day. I like the AA book 24 hours a day. And it tells me in that book, at least every other day, that all will be well in God's world. And that's where I get my peace from. Maybe it's not in my timing. Maybe it's not the way that I think it should look. But I trust that God will take care of me and the people in my life. So I came into program, I guess I shouldn't cover that, on January 8th, 1975. So I'm coming up on 37 years in program. And I have never left program. I can't say that I've been abstinent for 37 years, but I have persisted in continuing to come back. And for the first 18 years of program, I would categorize myself as a struggler. I would be abstinent for 5 days, and I would slip for 2 days. I would be abstinent Monday through Friday, and Friday night I would slip. and then I would have to start again on Monday. And I felt terrible about myself. I had weight loss. I did the step work. I came to the meetings, but I always felt guilty. I did not have the peace. I never had, you know, what they say is long-term abstinence. In February of 1993, so that's 18 years after working this program, I really believe that it was in this room, because we were in this room back then, people were coming back from rehabs in Florida with this new food plan that took away addictive substances. So those people were coming back with food plans without flour, sugar, and wheat. And I was on a food plan that had flour. That's what they put me on when I first came here. And I really came to understand how terribly addicted I am to those substances. And the fact that for the first 18 years, I was having, and I'll say it, bread in my food plan, I really came to understand how that bread product kept setting up cravings in my body and caused me to slip. And in February of 1993, I wanted what those people had. They said that they don't have cravings anymore. And here I am, continually battling my cravings. And you know what they say, if it gets to the point where you're fighting, you lose. Because this disease is just more powerful than we are. If I am ever fighting my disease, all of this white knuckle abstinence is a doom to failure for me. I cannot win. And I was willing to do what those people did. I was willing to give up flour, sugar, and wheat, and I haven't taken them back since 1993. And I started to get a peace. Was my abstinence perfect? No. Because I'm a compulsive overeater, so I'm going to make it up with something. And I made it up with volume. You know, I didn't always weigh and measure, but I didn't eat flour, sugar, and wheat. And I started to even put on weight doing that. I should tell you that when I first came into the program, I weighed 230 pounds. At one point, I had lost 88 pounds. It lasted about a second because I wasn't prepared to maintain that weight on the scale. And I'm nowhere near that 88 pounds now. I'm probably keeping off about 50 pounds since 1975, which is significant. So that's not applause. That's for persisting and keeping on coming back. So where a lot of my problems came with my food was eating at night. I really believe that I have another disease called night eating syndrome. I'm one of those people who has trouble falling asleep, trouble staying asleep, and I have used food to numb myself. I've used food as a sedative. I have taken Ambien, I have taken Tylenol PM. Right now I'm taking melatonin. I need help, you know. I need help. But I would wake up in the morning and feel guilt and remorse because I had eaten during the night. And I just felt terrible about myself. And I also did not want to tell my sponsor when I called her in the morning because, again, I was going to tell her I had the same problem. And so I wasn't always honest about what happened during the night. And you know what that does to your self-worth. Something happened to me just this past May. I was just very frustrated. And this past May, I'm a believer of the 12 steps. I've worked the steps many times. I've been to the Back to Basics. I read the step books. I decided to put myself through the steps with my specific problem in mind of eating excess food at night. Specifically, I was eating dry cereal out of a box. I would put it in a cup. Then I would go back and get another cup and probably three cups, and I would shudder when I looked at the caloric value. It was probably more than I had eaten all day, what I was eating in those three cups of cereal at night. And that's how I would wake up in the morning. But I was desperate. I didn't know how to get to sleep. So I tried to fix it myself. And you know what? It worked. It put me to sleep. But it made me feel terrible when I got up in the morning. So since I'm a believer in the steps, what I tried to do was to take the steps with that specific issue in mind and see if it would work to relieve me. And not only did I work with that specific issue in mind, you know how the steps say we were compulsive, we were powerless? I decided I'm going to put the pronoun I. So for step one, what I did was I admitted that I am powerless over eating cereal at night and that my life is unmanageable. I read step one in the big book. I read step one in the 12 and 12, the OA 12 and 12, and I did writings on my powerlessness and the size of my powerlessness with respect to that one specific issue. Then I did the same thing with step two. I came to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity, and in my mind, sanity meant I would no longer have to use that excess food. I believe that God has the power, but I just didn't have the wherewithal to wait for his power to kick in at 4 o'clock in the morning to put me back to sleep. So then in step three, I made a decision to turn my will, my life, and my powerlessness over eating cereal and extra food at night over to the care of my higher power. And I did that every single day. Step three doesn't mean that I don't eat the cereal. I did. Step three means I made the decision that I was willing to have God help me, that I was willing to turn my life. And a lot of times it was just lip service. It didn't make my problem go away. And I'm not surprised because as I understand it, you can't just work the first three steps. There are 12. And they need to be worked in order, and they all need to be worked. That's what I was taught. So I went on to step four, and I made a searching and fearless moral inventory of my powerlessness over eating cereal and extra food at night. And I came up with a whole list of character defects that were related to that specific issue. Certainly, I wasn't honest with my sponsor. A lot of fear because I was afraid I was going to be able to fall back to sleep at night. Lack of patience because I could ask God and then 1 minute later I just got out of bed and took the food myself. I wasn't willing to wait to just lie there uncomfortable. And certainly lack of trust that that God would help me in time. You know, it had to be done, sooner. I wasn't willing to wait. And I must say that a lot of what I did was during the night was try Christina's prayer. Be still and know that I am God. And that would hold me for a while, but it didn't always get me through without eating. At that point, I did step five. I admitted to God, myself, and my sponsor the exact nature of those wrongs. And one of the wrongs was that I was not being honest with my sponsor, and I had to tell her that, and I didn't like that idea. But I was committed to doing it the way it's written, because I wanted the result. And in my mind, I knew, because I was taught, that the relief does not come until step nine. That's when the promises come. So I was going to push through those steps because I wanted the relief. Step six is an unbelievable step. I read it in detail in the OA 12 and 12. And this is what step six says. I was entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. You know, I used to really misunderstand step six. I thought step six meant if I was angry, I couldn't be angry anymore. If I was jealous, I couldn't be jealous anymore. I thought I had to just stop having my defects. But what it says in step six was that I was entirely ready to have God remove the defects. So there's two new concepts. First of all, God is going to do the removing, not me. Step six in my mind is exactly the same as step one, where I admit that I'm powerless over food. Step six is where I admit that I'm powerless over my defects. And step six also says entirely ready. How do I know if I'm entirely ready? How do I get entirely ready? I just knew, and I don't know the answer to that. I just know that I could not control the defects. I could not make them go away. But what it said in the OA 12 and 12 that helped me was, it says, if you want to be entirely ready, you have to, quote, turn my back on the old self-destructive behavior and act as if I don't have the defects. So what did that mean? I had to act as if that I wasn't dishonest. That meant that if I had trouble with my food during the night, I had to be honest about it. It meant that I had to act as if I had patience to wait for God to help me and not just go to the refrigerator. And what that meant for me was I had to lay in bed sometimes for 5 hours, like from 2 a.m. to 7 a.m., and not fall asleep. And so I said, what's the worst thing that can happen? I'll be tired. Thank goodness I'm retired. I don't have to go to work. Mm-hmm. But there were nights that I did not sleep at all because I was trying to act as if I didn't have the defects. And the essence of step six, it says in the OA 12 and 12, is a willingness to change. I have to be willing not to have those defects. I can't do it myself. God can do it for me. But if I don't have the willingness, I'm not going to get the help. That's what I got out of step six. In step seven, I humbly asked him to remove my shortcomings. And humbly is a key word. You know, and humble to me means I'm just at my wit's end. I can't do anything about them. I have no power. And that's where the humility comes in. I have to accept that I have these defects, because for years I was in denial about them, and I have to ask God to help me change. But I also have to be willing to let go of old attitudes and behaviors. I can't have what I want when I want it. You know, maybe I'm not going to be able to fall asleep. Maybe I'm not going to be able to have that cereal, which I know is going to act as a sedative. I have to do my part, and then what it says in step seven, God will do his part in his time. So I came to understand that, and it didn't make the problem go right away because it says, in God's time. And I had to accept that I'm doing the best that I can with the step work, but I still don't have the power to stop. And there were some nights that I still went to food, even when I was up to step seven. But the thing that did change at this point was I was honest with my sponsor. And it says in step seven that we have to practice these new behaviors, even if it doesn't work, you know, the first few months even. I have to keep practicing the new behaviors. Because I really believe that just the way the disease is progressive, the recovery is progressive too. In step eight, I made a list of all persons I had harmed by this behavior and became willing to make amends. Well, I was it. I really didn't hurt anybody else with this particular behavior. And so I was on the top of my list. And step eight says that I have to forgive myself, which meant that I had to let go of guilt and shame. And it also said I had to write down in black and white what I was angry about myself for. And that really helped me to see the limits of my of the disease behavior. I want to move it along a little. I made direct amends to myself in step nine, and it was not just by saying, I'm sorry, Cheryl. It was by changing my behavior. I can no longer afford to do that. And in step 10, I continue to take personal inventory and look for when those defects come up. I call my sponsor every morning at 10 after 7. She works. I call her on her schedule. I do a lot of reading and writing. I do a lot of praying. The thing that helped me most get a lot is the phone meetings. There's something called the parking lot, which is not an officially endorsed OA meeting, but there's a recovery meeting on a phone number from 1 a.m. to 6:30 a.m. every morning where they talk recovery. I'm on it. I was on it at 4 o'clock this morning. I was up. Step 11, I seek through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God, you know, asking him to help me not use food to fall asleep, asking him to help me not be dishonest. And having had a spiritual awakening, which I feel like I have, it's more than just a spiritual awakening. The promises have come through. I mean, I cannot believe that since the beginning of May, I have not had cereal. And for the first 36 years, I grappled with that. I mean, that's proof of God's presence in my life. And what I would like to share with you is something else that I do in the morning, because I don't want to keep going, but there is an abstinence prayer that somebody, I had heard it on the phone meeting, and I didn't have a copy of it, but somebody in this room, not here today, had sent me a copy of it. And I want to tell you, I say this every day because it talks about abstinence, but it talks about abstinence in terms of the steps. So it says, God, today is a new day for me, and with you it can be a day of abstinence. So that means to me, it's a new day. It has nothing to do with yesterday. And also, with you, it can be a day of abstinence. With myself only, it cannot be a day of abstinence. With you, it says, I can handle anything. I have to handle everything around me because those are the things that would lead me to food. And only with God's help can I do that. It says, I ask for your protection in case sometime during the day my desire to eat compulsively or eat cereal or eat excess food at night, you plug it in, becomes stronger than my desire to abstain. The key word for me in that line is protection. If I wait until the food craving, it's too late. I won't ask at that point. I need to, it's like when you buy insurance and it's there when you need it. I need to have the protection in advance. It says, I ask for your protection today from anyone and anything that would interfere with my abstinence. Because people, places, and things are going to do what they do. And I don't want to eat over that. Then it says, and here's where step one comes in. I know that I am powerless over food and that my life can become unmanageable again. And what this makes me think of, it's a lot easier to keep my abstinence than it is to get it. I don't want to give it back. Then it says, I do believe that you will relieve my compulsion and restore me to sanity. That's step two. And with my concept of my higher power, it's been proven to me that he certainly has enough power to help me, you know, recover. Step three, here it is. Please help me know your will for me today and give me the willingness to carry it out. I have to ask for the help. And then it says, I turn my will and my life over to you. Well, I never knew what it meant to turn my will and my life over to you. And what I believe is that that's steps 4 through 9. If I do steps 4 through 9, that's the process of getting rid of my will and doing it God's way. It says, please guide me through another day of abstinence. God, I need you. Please grant me genuine humility. Because without humility, I'm going to think that I can control it myself, and that comes back every once in a while. So I need to be reminded of humility. What I'd like to do is, I don't have enough for everybody, but I have this abstinence prayer. Could you help just give out like 2 or 3 to each row? And maybe we can all say the prayer together. That's how I'd like to end my part. And if anybody would like a copy of this prayer and you don't get one to take home today, if you give me your email address, I'll be happy to email it to you. This is the prayer that I do in addition to, you know, reading from a couple of books in the morning, writing my food plan down, committing my food, sometimes writing a letter to God, sometimes writing God's answer back to me. If you have never tried that, it'll blow your mind. So if everybody can just get your eyes on one of these, maybe we can just ask for God's help today. Let's read it out loud together. God, today is a new day for me, and with you it can be a day of abstinence. With you I can handle anything. I ask for your protection in case sometime during the day my desire to eat compulsively becomes stronger than my desire to abstain. I ask for your protection today from anyone or anything that would interfere with my abstinence. I know that I am powerless over food and that my life can become unmanageable again. I do believe that you will relieve my compulsion and restore me to sanity. Please help me know your will for me today and give me the willingness to carry it out. I turn my will and my life over to you. Please guide me through another day of abstinence. God, I need you. Please grant me genuine humility. Thanks.
Hi, folks. My name is Buddy. I'm a compulsive overeater. So I guess we're talking about action and abstinence perfect together. And the way I look at it is, you have to. The first thing is acceptance. You have to accept and be willing to take the action to become abstinent. I'm of view, and I don't know if everybody agrees with me, you must be abstinent to deal with your feelings. If I wasn't abstinent, I couldn't deal with my feelings because I would be dealing with my feelings through the food. I would be eating, binging, and doing everything I possibly can to try to soothe myself. And for today, I'm so much better off. I've been abstinent a little over 2 years now. And I can deal with my feelings. I recently had ended a relationship of about a year, and I'm dealing with that emotions of ending that. If I was into the food, I couldn't deal with it. But there was a part that leading up to, you know, separating, and the part we've been separated about a month now, to deal with that, I can only do that if I'm abstinent. And I'm turning my will over to the care of God. I'm turning to God as much as I possibly can. I've been going back to my religion of choice, which is an action that helps me very much. I've been doing some spiritual things, mostly they're Hindu-based spiritual things. That helps me tremendously. A little bit of action also. I've gone to yoga class. I had a gym membership for 20 years. It was like putting money in the charity bin. I gave them my money, and they never saw my body at the door. Never. And all of a sudden, I said, well, I'm a little cheap. Good deal. How do I give it up? Well, God bless that I'm there 3 days a week now, 3-4 days a week, and I'm doing my thing, and I'm taking yoga classes. God, when I walked in these rooms 4 years ago, I never thought in my wildest imagination was I going to be doing a downward dog, or whatever you want to call it, you know, something like that, and working at a yoga. It is great, but it's also yoga is really based on spirituality, and it's all connected. I'm Jewish, and I don't mind, you know, I go hear that message. I come here, and I hear that message. I go to Hindu, I chant, I go to Hindu things, I go to yoga. It is all the same message. You know, a little different, but it's all, you know, find the light in your heart, find the love, find peace and happiness, and move on. And that's really what I was looking for. When I came in here, I was fairly miserable. I was dealing with an ex-wife that was just, it was miserable. I don't need to go there. And I was looking for something. I was eating nonstop. And I knew it. And every day, just like in the big book said, I was, you know, God, I'm going to give this up tomorrow. I am not going to go through this. And by the evening, I was all over with, oh, God, tomorrow, don't let me do it. And the next day, I'm right back at it. So I came to these rooms a little over 4 years ago, and I didn't find abstinence for about 2 years because I wasn't willing. I wasn't accepting. I came and heard the message, and the message was loud and clear from day one. I'll never forget the first meeting I went to. It was Westfield. I think it's a 7:30 in Westfield. Cried like a baby. And then I'm saying, oh my God, I'm a middle-aged man sitting at a meeting crying like a baby. You know, and it just took me back. I'm like, why am I crying? That's how much I realized I was in the right place, and I heard the message. But I came for about 2 years, and I kept hearing the message, but I was still doing my will. And to the part of, oh great, I'm in a meeting, I feel great, and out in the car, and doing the wrong thing. Out in the car 15 seconds after leaving a meeting. It wasn't doing the right thing, but I was hearing it, and it was clicking. About 2 years ago, a friend of mine who basically 12-stepped me, he's not in this fellowship, but he's in too many of other fellowships, told me to go do this. You're going to find a good balance in your life. And that's what I was looking for. I was looking for some peace happening. You know, I wanted to be a kinder, more loving person. I was miserable. I was happy. I was aggressive. I lost jobs. I've been married twice. You know, I just wasn't in the right place. It all started to fall in place the day I became abstinent. He introduced me to a gentleman who was also in his other fellowships, in this fellowship. I never met the guy in my life. Called me on the phone, how you doing, buddy? Good. Do you have a sponsor? I go, no, I don't. He goes, now you do. Oh, okay. What do they say in this, how it works? You know, be willing to, you know, whatever you want what they have. Okay, now he's abstinent. He's fairly, I think, a spiritual, strong person. I want what he has. I do it. Okay, tomorrow I want you to go buy a scalp. No. 3-4 days, you buy the scale? No. You know, you go, what the F? What's the problem? Like, go buy the scale. And I slowly listened to him. And the minute I really started, for the first day was abstinent, my whole life has changed around. I am a much happier person today. I am much more spiritual. I met some people the other day. I was out. I met somebody. I was talking to them like peace, love, and brotherhood. I mean, it was really, like, bizarre. I was wondering if people look at me like, am I, well, born again, you know? But I'm not. And this buddy who 12-stepped, he says, buddy, that's, I basically was talking to a young lady. He's like, you can't take program. I don't meet people that way. I didn't mean to do that. That wasn't a plan. That's my life right now. I'm a much happier person, and this person didn't seem so happy. And I was saying, you know, you could do this, you could do that. And I never mentioned fellowship, but it's just, it's so much better for me, and it's such a better place. And so I really, the minute I became, I was accepted this program, and I became willing, I became abstinent. And then once I was abstinent, and I didn't have to deal with the food, didn't have to soothe my emotions with food, I started to deal with my own emotions. I'm a single dad. I'm a much better dad today than I was 2 years ago. The ex, I have no feelings with it right now. No more chaos. The chaos is gone. For today, it's great. The kids are doing great. I have an older son that's a little bit of a handful. Went off to college this year. He's just Dean's List, happy as can be, loads of friends. Hi, Dad. I mean, I'm like, it's like talking to another child on the phone. He's coming home on Tuesday. Well, I'll be tested, but I have a feeling it's going to be good. I'm in a better place because I had a couple months away from him. He's in a better place because I think he's found a life. He's found himself away from me. You know, he's found his own life, so it's much better. But I'm able to deal with him. I'm able to be mindful of him, and that's another, you know, it's a little bit of a spiritual thing. The Buddhists talk about mindfulness. It's a great word. It's my mantra for recently, mindfulness. I mean, if you don't know it, Google it and look it up. Any of us, and that's all this program is, to be mindful. Try to be abstinent and be mindful, you know, for what direction you're being pointed through. You do these steps, you're pointed in a certain direction. And that's what I'm so grateful for. And I'm really working the programs. And there are things that are going on I want to deal with. And I'm just pointed out, no, work these steps, and it'll be given to you. You know, like the ex-girl, I want to go back and say, man, I miss you, I want to come back. There's a reason we're not together. It might not be the reason we might be together in 2 months. You don't know. But let's just continue to work on these steps, and you'll be guided in the right direction. Somebody said that to me, you know, 4 years ago. Like I met a young lady today that, you know, Bernadette had a great message, but if you're not ready to hear that God message, she ran. She's sorry. She's not here right now, because the God message was too overwhelming for her. She heard of OA and she was coming for a diet plan. But it really isn't a diet plan. It is a God message. Go find God, find happiness, find the light in your life. And if you find that and you accept abstinence, life is better. And it's really a 12-step program for life. It's not a food plan. We're not here to be food. And that's the best. I don't dream about how I used to. And I also was, my degree is in hotel and restaurant management. I've been in and out of restaurants and food. I'm a salesman now. I go into back kitchens of restaurants. And when most of them like me, when they like me, what do they want to do? Feed me. Feed me, or, you know, sit down and have a glass of wine. No, that's not happening. So it's just wild that I'm around it and I see it, and I see huge portions of it, amounts of it, and guys with their hands in it. That's what I do all day long. In and out of kitchens, in and out of hotels, in and out of country clubs. That's all I see. But I've never once in the last 2 years picked up something off the table. And the old days, I picked stuff off the table. I stole stuff, you know, grab this, put it in my pocket, walk out so I could go binge in the car. I'm not doing that for today. And I guess a little bit, it's my favorite part of the book, and I'm going to go through it a little bit, is how it works. Because I think that's basically how I found abstinence. And the first line is, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. It's real simple. Follow the path. Come here. We all come here and hear the message. Follow the path. The path to find what you're looking for, I believe, is first acceptance and then it's abstinence. Now, I know there are people in this room that argue that a little, saying you can find the path and not be abstinent. But I'm too cloudy up here if I'm not abstinent. And then it says, those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. And usually men or women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Well, I came in here and I wanted to, you know, I want to be honest. I want to be a kind, loving person. I want to be honest. If I'm not honest, the rest is all BS. So I said, I can do this. You know, I can really, it's a simple program. Okay, if it's simple, I can do it. Can I be honest? Yeah, I'm dying to be honest. You know, I kind of, you know, was a teenager in the 70s. I always liked a little bit of the hippie mentality, my music, the hippie music. You know, I always liked the little blonde girl with the bandana on. That was my kind of thing. I never had that in my life, but I'm finding that now, that the peace and serenity comes through this program, is what I've been looking for a long time. So, And then they seem to have been born, though. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Once again, it's just be honest. Be honest. It's okay to be honest. We could all be honest in this room, because we're not taking it out of these rooms. We're all here to help each other, hear the message, and we all want something that this program offers. So the honest thing comes up about four times in this chapter. And then it says that some of these we bought, but I'll skip it a little bit, we thought we could find an easier, softer way. There is no easier way. It's abstinence or no way. You got it. Maybe I'm preaching a little bit, but you have to find the abstinence to deal with your emotions and deal with things in life. And then the last one, I keep going, half measures availed us of nothing. It's abstinence. You can't have half abstinence. It doesn't. What does that mean? So I always think about that. I mean, the part, I love reading this in meetings that do read it. I always raise my hand to read it. And so rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. That starts it off. And at the end, half measures avail us nothing. And I think that's the important thing to remember about being abstinent, is I think it's the backbone, and then just go find, you know, the light in your life, and things will be better. And I keep coming back. I keep coming to these meetings and trying to hear the message, and I love hearing the message. Everybody who spoke today, there's something to be heard wherever you go. And it's just find the guidance and the love in your life. I mean, Bernadette spoke beautifully today, and you could see she's a very spiritual, religious person, and that's the backbone. It's a 12-step program to help us get better. We're not here because we want to be on a diet plan, or we'd be sitting in some other room down the block. You know, we're here because we want to find, you know, love in our life and you know, follow the light. Is, you know, every group says it. You hear it in one of the readings. We have things about light. Hindus talk about following the light, follow the light. You know, you'll find peace and happiness and love in your life. I know the Jewish religion says that. They use a lot of metaphors of light and candles and you know, the eternal light. And it's all the same. It's all the same thing. So I just wish you all peace and happiness. Woo! Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Pete, compulsive overeater from Hoboken. Here we go. I came into the program about 13 months ago. I came in, my weight was 408 pounds. Right now I weigh about 216 pounds. I just wanted to grab you with that. Because every time I look in the mirror, I'm amazed at that. And if that doesn't make you smile, I don't know what would. How I got introduced to this program was my life was in turmoil. My father just passed away. Wife was getting ready to leave, and I was left with raising three kids. Two of them were young adults, and one of them was 15. And that's how I was introduced to this program about maybe 3 months prior to that. How I came about getting introduced to it was someone handed me a book. The book was the OA 12 and 12. And I started reading it just periodically around the house when I was sitting, sulking, stuffing my face with stuff. And it started to sink in. Now, in my life, I grew up in an Italian family. And basically, food was love. And we ate whether we were happy, sad, glad, mad, it didn't matter. There was just food everywhere. And earlier in my life, I came to that realization when the school that I went to closed. And I was helping move stuff around, and my whole family was helping. And we found some medical records. In kindergarten, I weighed 100 pounds. That was a realization for me. Now, I've been up and down the scale all over the place. I've lost large amounts of weight about three or four times in my life. This is my third time. When I was in high school, when I was in eighth grade, I weighed about 250 pounds. And I started exercising and losing weight. By the time I graduated high school, I was about 170 pounds. How I did that was through, like I said, I just basically cut down on everything that I was eating. And I did a lot of exercise. My daily schedule, my daily routine used to be going to school. After school, I would go to the Y. I'd work out with weights for about an hour and a half. I'd run a mile. Then, after I ran that mile, I'd play basketball for about a half an hour. And then I would walk to work. And I would walk home, get changed. Then I would go to work. And after I worked, I would go and hop on my bike and ride Hoboken about four or five times. Around. Hoboken's a mile square. So I was doing about four miles a day on a bicycle. At that rate, when you're doing that type of exercise, you can eat anything you want. and it, I didn't really give up that much of the food. It just proceeded in my life just to keep on losing and gaining. Because by the time I was 30 years old, I had two children, and I gained all the way back. So at that point, again, big life change. My father had gotten sick, and I was about to go through some more turmoil. My father was starting to get sick. We were think about selling a family business, and I was going through a big job change, trouble with my marriage. That's where the problem started. And basically, I started eating again, and I just couldn't deal with life. I couldn't deal with my family life, couldn't deal with the fact that I was losing my source of income. So I basically, again, started to try to control it once again myself, and just couldn't do it. I did manage eventually. It took me about 3 years. I lost about 120 pounds. And started to feel good. But then again, with this disease, we just typically get the problems just keep on coming back. And I didn't come to the realization. And then that's when I started working for the city of Hoboken. And again, my life started to spiral out of control. And that's when someone handed me the OA 12 and 12. The person that handed it to me is one of my sponsors right now. And like I said before, I started reading it, and I started to think, is this really me? I just started to think about the way my life was going and what direction I had, which was none. Basically, I was up and down the same hill, kept on banging into the same wall, putting the weight back on, and just going back and forth, back and forth. And so I read step one, read step two, read step three. It took me about 3 months to realize, you want to know what this program is for me. But in that time, my job, the job situation was changing, and they were making cutbacks. So I start hearing about layoffs, and I was hearing that my department was going to be hit hard. They were going to lay everybody off. So at this point, the person who handed me the book, she called me to her office. She was one of the bosses, and she asked me, so what do you think about the book? And I said seems like a good plan. And she said, okay, how about going to a meeting? I said, give me a little while. I got some stuff going on in my life. Give me some time. So at that time, when it took for me to get the layoff notice, maybe like 2 weeks later, for me to say, okay, maybe it's time to start doing something. And at that point, we were basically working on, she was working on saving one of the mechanics, because that's what I do. And little did I know that she had in mind that she was going to save me. And when I got the layoff notice, I started paying attention to Hoboken politics, and I started going to the council meetings. And I went to the council meeting, and I seen a gentleman there who's in another program who was half the size of what he was. I immediately wanted what he had. I didn't have to do anything. After the meeting, he approached me, asked me about going to a meeting, and again, I said, oh, maybe I'll think about it. And walking away from that meeting, I was saying, what are you, a moron? You need help. You need something. And I still wasn't willing. And at that point, another council meeting came. He asked me about it. And at that point, I don't know what changed, but something just clicked. And I decided to go to the meeting. My first meeting was actually in OA. And it was the Edison Sunday night group, and I was jazzed by it. It gave me, it just inspired me. Then I went to a Monday night FA meeting, and that's where I got my food plan from. As soon as I walked in the door, he slapped me. He asked me for $10. He gave me the big book, and he also introduced me to my another sponsor for FA. And I started the next day. I went out and I bought a scale, and I just started working the program. And it was just amazing how once I made that willingness, and once I it just clicked for me. In the first 2 weeks, I dropped about maybe 32 pounds, And it was, again, I'd lost weight before, but I never lost it like that. And at that time, when I first got involved with the program, like I said, I was my wife had left, my father had just passed away, and I was just finally coming out of the fog from giving the food up. And it was just, for me, it was just amazing to come to these realizations that, yes, you want to know what? Even if I'm not a food addict, even if I'm not an overeater, guess what? Walk like a duck, talk like a duck. Just do what you gotta do. And then the willingness, again, just was there. And I just kept on forging through. And at that point in my life, I was about maybe 3 months into the program, and my wife's nephew had lived with us before. He's 15 years old, and he was living with his father, but he wasn't having a good time of it. So he didn't want to do it anymore. He couldn't take it. So again, I opened up my doors to him. Now I already have, like I said, 3 children. And I already have 1 15-year-old. Now this brought 2 15-year-olds in the house. And anybody who's raising teenagers knows. It was something that I really had to think long and hard about, but I eventually had to do it. And he came back in the house, and in 3 months, the same problems he was giving his father, he was giving me. Because now I was in the program for about 6 months, and I walk in the house, and immediately I felt something was wrong. I go to his room. His room is trashed. Everything is gone. So I immediately get on the phone. I figured it out. He ran away. So I immediately get on the phone. And I call the cops. And I just basically started cleaning the house, fixing dinner, doing what I was supposed to be doing. Cops came. I reported them missing, filled out the paperwork, did what I had to do. And I just started cleaning. I called work. I took off the next couple of days because I didn't know what was going on. And I sat down at like 12 o'clock at night. I sat down, and I turned on the TV to relax a little bit. And I thought about it. I said, wow, I'm not in the food over this. I just said, if that's not, I just immediately went into my normal routine. And I don't share that much. I don't talk too much about what's going on, just because I'm always processing them and always thinking about it. I'm still relatively young in program. I don't feel that I have that much to offer. But I just couldn't believe at that time to make that realization. It was just amazing to me that I had a need over it. And eventually he did come back, and I just kept on. Again, I just kept on with my program. Just kept on pushing through. And it just got easier and easier and easier. I mean, the abstinence for me comes easy. The food, I really don't want it. Last Thanksgiving, I ended up making 2 Thanksgiving dinners, and I went that day. I actually went to my sister's house, but my daughter had come to me, and she said that my in-laws, they weren't going to celebrate it. So at that time, I decided, you want to know what? Let's make them dinner. So I made the dinner for them, and I sent it over to the house. And it was just, for me to have the willingness to do something like that for people that I have a problem with, which I did have a big problem with them, I right now I sit back and I find it amazing that I was able to do it. And besides all of that, I was having problems at work. And one of the gentlemen at work was always, for 9 years that I've worked there, always gave me a hard time. He's like a brother to me. I love him like a brother, but he's like a crazy brother. He comes at you the wrong way all the time, and he makes you want to, he really makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And he's just driven me crazy from the first moment. So anyway, I just trying to deal with him. Again, program stepped in, and again, without even realizing it, he had ended up getting suspended for a while. And when he came back, he got demoted. And his second day back, I'm there, I'm driving back and forth, picking up some vehicles, and he's doing his thing with the sweeper, and he's on top of the sweeper cleaning it off, and I'm parked. He's near the door, but he's not blocking the door where I gotta go. But I wasn't trying to get in the door, wasn't trying to go anywhere near the door. he was standing on top of the sweeper, berating me about just about anything, because I was sitting there, and he didn't, I guess he, this bothered him, but I was waiting for two other people to come out so we can shuttle cars back and forth. So he, now, meanwhile, it's getting close to quitting time, there's about 15 or 20 people, so he has an audience, and he's standing on top of the sweeper, just degrading me, belittling me, and I'm just sitting there in this car thinking, is this guy crazy? He just got, he's back from suspended on the second day, and he was a boss, he's not a boss anymore, and here he is belittling me in front of witnesses, like 15 or 20 people. So he just kept it up and kept it up, and finally, I got sick and tired of it, and I said to him, listen, don't worry about what I'm doing. Worry about yourself. You're not a boss anymore. I said, I'm doing my job. Do your job. Just leave me alone. So at that point, his response to this was, oh, well, maybe I should come down off the sweeper and kick your ass. I said, that's an option for you. I said, it may not go well. I said, but it's an option. So he didn't come off the sweeper. I stayed in the car, and then finally I went to do what I had to do, and then I came back, and someone else ended up going to another supervisor, telling him what happened, and he must have got pulled to the side and told. So I'm in another part of the shop doing my work, la-di-da-di-da. He comes over to me, oh, Peter, you have to go and tell the supervisor about what happened? I said, I didn't tell anybody. I looked him in the face and I said, listen, you need to leave me alone. That's it. Before program, forget about it. We would have been brawling in the middle of the yard in front of everybody, because there was no way I would have taken that from him, because it's happened. We've stood nose to nose before. And it's just amazing to me what the tools that this program has given me. It's just unbelievable. And I was actually feeling bad about what I had said to him in front of everybody, and I had discussed it with my sponsor. My sponsor told me straight out, you didn't do anything wrong. The only thing that you did was defend yourself. He gave you every reason to do what you did. And then I was just thinking about it, and then I was thinking about him. He also needs these rooms, and but he keeps on refusing. I keep on trying to get him here, but he just won't come. I just started thinking about the times in his life, or the times when we're arguing, and I started keeping track of it. Every time that that he does this to somebody, because I noticed that him doing it to other people, I noticed that his it's when his sugar is high, really it's not even not his it's not even his own fault. He doesn't even realize what's going on with himself. So that's another case where the program has just helped me with everything. And when the program adopted, I want to read something. When the program adopted this tool last year, I think it was at the beginning of this year, Action Plan. I just want to read it. An action plan is the process of identifying and implementing attainable actions, both daily and long-term, that are necessary to support our individual abstinence and emotional, spiritual, and physical recovery. While the plan is ours, tailored to our own recovery process, most of us find it important to work with a sponsor, fellow OA member, and or appropriate professional to help us create it. This tool, like a plan of eating, may vary widely among members and may need to be adjusted as we progress in our recovery. For example, a newcomer's action plan might focus on planning, shopping for preparing food. Some members may need a regular fitness routine to improve strength and health, while others may need to set exercise limits in order to attain more balance. Some of us may need an action plan that includes time for meditation and relaxation, or provides strategies for balance, work, personal interactions with family and friends, and our program. Others may need help to organize their homes, deal with their finances, and address medical, dental, or mental health issues. Along with working the steps on a daily basis, an action plan may incorporate the use of other OA tools, bring structure, balance, and manageability to our lives. As we use this tool, we find that we develop a feeling of serenity and continue to grow emotionally and spiritually while we make measurable progress one day at a time. Well, if what I just described to you doesn't show that this program, you immediately go into this, I don't know what else to say, because my life is mirroring what I hear in the rooms. It's unbelievable just the serenity that I'm getting from this. Do I still have problems? Hell yes. But I deal with them one day at a time, one moment at a time, one meal at a time. I just find that by putting my food on the scale, weighing and measuring is where it starts. And the rest follows. And that's how it works for me. And it's, I know I keep on repeating this, but I'm just amazed. Because I spent 44 years outside the rooms, and 1 year has given me more clarity and just more of what I needed in life than the past 44. And I just hope to continue to learn one day at a time, one moment at a time, one meal at a time. Thank you.